We'll kick off and start back again with a song from Sean Malone when he's here.
So I remember at many a conference I'd be at, when I was young conference, and I'd just be over Solidarity Forever. And I think for the week that's in it with the Tesco workers, with the Lewis drivers, it's exactly what we should bring to this event. So, when the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. Is there not a whole in common with the greedy parasite who would lash us into serfdom and would crush us with her might? Is there anything left to us but to organize and fight, for the union makes us strong? Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
It is we who plough the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Yet we stand at cast and starving amidst the wonders that we have made, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
The world is owned by idle drones, it's ours and ours alone. We have laid the white foundation, built it skyward stone by stone. It is ours not to slave it, but to master and to own, while the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
They have taken untold billions that they never taught us to earn, yet without our brain and muscle not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Come on now.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
In our hand is placed the power, greater than, in our hand is placed the power, greater than the hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring the birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity, comrades.
Well, Kevin McLaughlin reminds me that I joined the party the same year as Colin Halpin, but our paths never really crossed until the organisation was in very difficult political times in the early 90s and had to reorganise itself into just two branches, and the two branches struggled through myself, Sue, Colin, and well, there's fewer names that were mentioned because not welcome.
Joe Higgins was in that branch that
day. No, he was. He was in the Joe Higgins branch. We met in the Brogue. It was a tough time, but we struggled forward. And it reminds me recently, thinking back to what we'd done, what we had to do, and we were a fraction of the size we are here, comrades, and it wasn't as sexy as it is now to be. Come with a few points later on, chancing ourselves. Anyway, James Crowley made a point about the most revolutionary tasks are the most mundane. And if you don't get that, you don't get what a revolutionary is. A point was made that it's actually harder to live for the revolution than it is to die for it. Actually, it's much sexier to die for it in a lot of ways. But to live for it, and what we could say, the column is decade in, decade out, decade in. That's the, you know, and committing yourself to the ideas and actually slicing off a large chunk of your life and time and energy and heart and mind to this cause. It has to be the best thing you can do with your life. It's the best thing I've ever done with my life. And I'm sure by talking to Colin recently, he understands that there's nothing better he could have done with his life. And it's the mundane in the brogue, turning up the branch meetings, preparing for branch meetings, going on paper sales. When we went on paper sales door to door, you know, and so with a handful of papers sold at the end of the day, it was a time when we were turning away from the Labour Party as the left was disintegrating internationally and turning out and experimenting about trying to build revolutionary organisations outside what was a shrinking left movement. And Colin was there. And that all really that matters. And you take it for granted when you go to a meeting and you think, oh, meeting, or you say something, or I say something. Everything you do and everything you say as a revolutionary has a positive effect. You may not see it immediately, but I'm hoping Colin looks back to the times and what he committed and see in this room that his energies and his words and his commitment has been valuable and has been worth it. Thanks, Colin.
Okay, Thomas, I was just looking at some stuff recently about the working class and how it's perceived or how it's dealt with, let's say. And I came across some information that, for example, in the first 5 years of Glen Row, there was no wage earners depicted in the programme at all. There was no workers now, it was more. Yeah. But there was no depiction, it was like none whatsoever. And even in Fair City, which is meant to be. even in Fair City, which is meant to be based in the working class, what you have is people who are from working class backgrounds, but usually they're setting up their own businesses. And one academic described it as being working class experience, but heavy bourgeois aspirations. And there is an issue about the working class does not get its fair shake, obviously economically, socially, but it's not recognised as being the key force, or a key force in Irish society. But sometimes it breaks through, and so I just want to read a couple of paragraphs from an article from the Irish Times dated May the 24th last year. In socially disadvantaged areas of Dublin Darndale, tallies indicated an 80% yes. In Coolock, it was 88%. On the south side, tally suggested the Liberties voted 88%, yes. Cherry Orchard, 90%, and Ballyferm at 85%. In Jobstown, we're talking to the Joe and Burton, based on the Rock of Anti-Water Charges protesters in November, 85%, 87%. And the point was made in this article, and we registered this as well, that what was happening was the most oppressed sections of the working class were standing up, and in a sense, sometimes the most oppressed can see things clear and can reach further. And that happened in terms of that, but it also happened in terms of the water charges movement. And what we're celebrating in Cullen, and there is a particular thing, we're all part of the working class in this country, north and south. We're part of an international, and we agree, and that's all very, very important. But an element of what we're doing today is celebrating Cullen, who is a quintessential representative of the Dublin working class, and a very good representative of the Dublin working class. And there is a class distinction and uniqueness about the Dublin working class, the issue of sense of humour, including laughing at yourself, singing, and a tradition of singing, and storytelling, which Cullen is part of that. Anybody who will visit him will find. They may go for half an hour, but it won't be. Another aspect of the Dublin working class, particularly in the past perhaps, but I think it still exists, is out of poverty, out of scarcity, people have improvised. There's a cleverness, or as Susan sometimes says, a cleverality about the working class. There's certain innate qualities, which these do transcend other areas, but there's certain unique aspects to them, of fairness and decency. I remember once there was a chap who was a trader, very working class from the inner city, and I remember there was a conversation taking place in the context of a protest that Gamo workers were waging at the time. And there was one particular person getting a bit agitated with all these Quakers people around. And this other person who was with them, who was a trader, intervened and said, they're only looking for a few bob, come on now. But it's this sense of decency and fairness which has been completely sullied, those words have been completely sullied by a trade union bureaucracy that doesn't mean it. But there is actually a tradition of not passing pickets. Less so now, but it is part of the tradition of the working class in this country, and a fight in solidarity. And I think Cullen absolutely represented that, and in his political work represented that. More so than any other comrade was the stalwart on picket duty and countless different strikes, and will be known by many workers because of that tremendous commitment. The sense of an injury to one is an injury to all, the collective struggle being very important. Loyalty. Working class people, serious people, take things seriously. They're committed to something. It's important. Not blind loyalty, but loyalty to the cause. It's not about the individual, and it was never about the individual. Colin, it's always about the movement. And I'll come back and make a couple of points about that. So what we have sometimes, not all the time, but in this city in particular, you had it in 1914, you had it in 2014, you had it in 2015, is the people who reach the furthest, the people who instinctively, but also let's not diminish the intellect behind it, the people who put their stamp on things most, was the most oppressed sections of the working class. And Cullen won't mind me saying that Cullen comes from that working class that also has experienced difficult conditions, including institutions, etc., which are oppressive institutions. And the working class steps out of it, but Cullen is an example of somebody who has stepped out of that. And when he joined the organisation 30 years ago, out of a background of difficulties, poverty, crime, etc., took a conscious decision to turn and take a different path and to dedicate himself to the struggle of the working class and the struggle for revolutionary social change. And the comrade should really register the courage, because that meant breaking ties, because he knew that if he didn't break ties, he can get sucked back into that situation. So Cullen made sacrifices, serious sacrifices in doing that, and I think that is absolutely tremendous. And in order to do that also, you have to be truthful to yourself and honest. And that is one of the key things that I think Cullen has brought to his political approach. I think that Cullen is always respectful of comrades, and I think you know where you are with Cullen, because he'll tell it, basically. It's quite straight, it's quite honest. And you'll often have situations, and I'm sure when I say this, comrades will say, yes, that's happened many occasions. I've had many instances, and this is a strength, comrades shouldn't interpret what I'm saying as a negative,
where a columnist come back to me and said, that information I gave him was wrong. Actually, I found out subsequently that was wrong. Or, on an issue, if something has happened or he's changed his view, and like people come back to you and say, I changed my view on something. Because it's not about the individual. And sometimes, it'll be 20 years later now, he will remember the exact place where he said this to you, exactly what your response was at the time. But the comment should register that is really serious. It's really a principled approach. That it's not about, well, you know, why I'm right or whatever the case might be. It's about getting it right from the point of view of the working class. And in a way, Colm, because of his experiences, he's able to take a simple approach. Things are quite straightforward for him because he's been through experience and he knows what's important, so therefore he keeps things quite simple. And as I'm speaking and making those points and talking about the sacrifices that Colm has made and the amount of money, for example, the amount of subs he puts into the organisation over 30 years, it's just phenomenal. But this is very conscious. The comment shouldn't think that this is just, you know, Colm has always this or that and so therefore it's just an extension. Colm thinks all the time. He's always thinking about the organisation and the struggle. It's constant. And when he makes sacrifices, he's doing it very, very consciously. He's consciously trying to strengthen the organisation and the movement. And in that sense, as I speak, the comments will see, and comments who have been around for a period of time will remember, that there's huge similarities between Colm and Nimrod Sajaki in terms of the attitude and how important the struggle was in terms of their lives. So I just want to mention a couple of specific instances. In 1987, the year after Colm joined, we had a summer camp in Kilrush, which was minus Davies at that time. I think they only emigrated into Kilrush after that sometime, perhaps in the early 90s. But every time we had a summer camp, we started the summer camps in 1982, and we didn't know how to set up the marquees, basically. There's a knack to setting up marquees, but we didn't have the knack, so we would have 200 people pulling this way and 200 people pulling that way, and it was just madness. Until we actually had a discussion with the people who supplied the marquees and said, is there a way of doing this? And then they described the way of doing it, and you can do it with five or six people. And so five or six of us went down to Kilrush, and Colm was one of us. And it was doable, but it wasn't easy, and we struggled a little bit. And then the rains came, but we couldn't afford not to work in the rain. So I'm not sure whether it was Colm, but somebody improvised that we were all wearing black sacks. We put holes in the tops of the black sacks, and we put the black sacks, you know, over our heads, etc. And we were working for days setting up the marquees, but it was all set up. But then on the first day of the summer camp, there was no sign of Colm anywhere. And then the next day he turned up, and Colm was exhausted as a result of the work and had gone away to recuperate somewhere. But it was very, very hard work. We were all zonked down for it, so it probably was better with the 200 people. Another instance, and I think Colm is the type of person, whether it be youth offence, whether it be those clashes that happened in the early 1990s or in industrial situations. There was a particular situation where I think it was the early Nairn Centre was a strike in Cork, I think. And we were doing some solidarity action because there was an early Nairn Centre in Henley Street. And there was a bouncer who was trying to push his weight around. And, well, I won't go into the details, but the expression, the Ballymun flying headbutt was used earlier on. But another expression that Colm sometimes uses is the proletarian rubdown. Something happened, and then suddenly bouncers from every store were just descending on us. So we all descended on Colm. It was like a rugby scrum in the middle of Henry Street, where we were all on top of Colm and surrounded by bouncers. Just that was from that point of view. So the point that I'm trying to make is that Colm represents the Dublin working class, and he represents the best of the Dublin working class, and he should be proud of the Dublin working class and the steps it's making, but the Dublin working class should be very, very proud of Colum. But since Colum joined the organisation, and to give an example, when Trotsky joined the Bolshevik Party, he was involved in the struggle against Menshevism and against reform and compromise just before the Russian Revolution. There was people who were criticising Trotsky inside the Bolsheviks, and Lenin said that since Trotsky joined the Bolshevik Party, there's been no better Bolshevik. And since Colum joined the militant force, which then militant labour, were we ever militant socialists? I'm not sure. Somebody, Killian might come back on that. But we became the Socialist Party. But since then, since Colum joined, there's been no better Bolshevik.
Ruth is going to sing a song at Colum's behest, James Connolly, and then Colum is going to come in and say a few words. Colum is holding back, he'll have a song in a while, so we'll mix it up a little bit more. Over to Ruth then.
So I was, Angela's talking a lot on Henry Street yesterday with the reveal of the 8th Amendment for about 4 hours, so the most of them the best. But obviously for Colum, I'd love to sing this song. So just look for the microphone, if not, we can struggle on.
We can hear you fine, Ruth, if you want to hear it.
Well,
that
comes
in,
it might as well
come in. Two greens are down here, so something to do with that.
Not there, Bob.
Who mourns now the gallant man? Oh, lay me down in yon green
to doubting, hoping them. With union men on every side, and we swore we'd forge one mighty weapon, and fill the covenant with pride.
Okay, everybody, last verse.
Where, oh, where is our James coming? Where, oh, where? Gallant man, he's come to organize unions, and working men might yet be free.
It's important that they be given recognition, I think, you know, on an equal footing, which of course they will be, you know. But just to give them a mention here, like, thanks very much.
Myself, Colum and Michael O'Brien were staying in a B&B outside of the town, and I was still in college at the time, very young man at the old grizzled fucker you see standing before you today, and I had been entrusted with the keys to the B&B, and as we approached the B&B, there was a few of our party were a bit worse for wear, and I had been given this onerous task of holding onto the keys. Colum, as I produced the keys from my pocket, said to me, "You're a true Bolshevik, comrade." Now, I knew at the time that A, having possession of B&B keys didn't make me a Bolshevik. And B, being a Gottschalk student, it didn't make me a Bolshevik either. But what mattered to me is that Colum said it. Because there was a true Bolshevik. A proper socialist and a man who I admired greatly. And to hear him say that to me at that age, I was only maybe 21 at the time, meant so much to me because I'd been on stalls with Colum and I'd always felt
I was in the presence of someone of real integrity. For Holland, I know it's saying Victor Hara. Victor Hara of Chilvey, he lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with a song and his guitar. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Victor Hara was a peasant. He worked from a few years old. He sat upon his father's plow, and he watched the earth unfold, and his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. When the neighbors had a wedding, or one of their children died, his mother sang all night for them, with Victor by their side, and his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He grew to be a fighter against the people's wrongs. He listened to their grief and joys, and he turned them into songs. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He sang for the copper miners, he sang for the factory workers, and I can't remember the words of that verse, but I'll move on to the next one. He campaigned for a end day, working night and day, said take hold of your brother's hand, for the future begins today. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Now the generals seized Chile, and they arrested Victor then, and they caged him in a stadium with 5,000 frightened men. And his hands were gentle, and his hands were strong. Victor stood in the stadium, his voice was clear and strong, and he sang for his fellow prisoners till the guards cut short his song. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. They broke the bones in both his hands, they beat his lovely head, they tore him with electric shocks, and after 2 long days of torture, they shot him dead. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Now the generals rule Chile, and the British have their thanks, for they rule with hawker hunters, and they rule with chieftain tanks. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Everybody. Victor Hara of Chile, he lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. And his hands were gentle, his hands were strong. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong.
Sang it, but I didn't know it. And sing it. But I read what it says here. song of the American volunteers who fought in defense of the Spanish Republic against Franco's fascists, 1926 to 1928. So you are getting asked. This is some question you need the anthem of the English speaking veterans of the Spanish Civil War. It is assumed to be the area of Levy or Ballon or the early Civil War song. Take it down from the mast. There's a valley in Spain called Jamara. It's a place that we all know so well. It was there that we gave up a mumble. There's so many of our brave comrades fell. We are proud of the Lincoln Battalion and the fight from the creed that is made. There we fought right through sons of freedom as part of the 15th Brigade. Now we're far from the valley of sorrow, for this memory we ne'er will forget. So before we conclude this reunion, let us stand to our glorious dead. There's a valley in Spain called Jamara. It's a place that we all know so well. It was there that we gave up our manhood, and so many of our brave comrades fell.
Vegetarian, and it, actually I kind of agree with her, but I haven't quite got there yet. But I look around here this evening and I see what a hard job. Every sausage has been stopped. The unfortunate chickens hadn't a chance. There's mountains of mushrooms left. Terry was out to prove the point that Kevin made about Dublin weight. Some of us know Colin for decades, other comrades more recently. We don't know Colin's family. We should say tonight as well, because his family live in England, that with us in spirit are Colin's two sons and daughters, and their mother Maria and one of his grandchildren is coming next week to visit him. And that's a very important aspect in Colum's life and thinking as well. Now, on a night like tonight, I can't help thinking just how, in one sense, the decades fly by, and then in another sense, the 1980s are shrouded in the mists of time. It's a long time ago in many ways. And that was when Colin joined the regiment, which has now transmogrified through various and difficult routes into the Socialist Party, which of course is part of the anti-austerity lines. But in those days, there were no TDs. There were no counselors. There was no weekly appearance on television and radio by our wonderful public representatives, which is a huge affirmation for every comrade of the work that we do. There was only then the strength of our ideas to recommend us and a commitment to the socialist transformation of society. That really was the bedrock and the groundwork of what we were. And Cullum has for 3 decades actively pursued that commitment with huge consistency above all and huge determination above all. Now, Cullum, like myself, is of a certain generation, but his spirit and his mentality, as we can see in relation to what Sean just said when he sang his song, is absolutely beautiful. And that's really, I think, sums up much of the spirit of our party, really, but also particularly what Cullum brings to it. Age, experience, very important, but really the sense of solidarity in relation to all our comrades whatsoever. Now, I want to make one or two presentations to Cullum on behalf of the comrades. And first of all, we got a nice card with a pink envelope on which a lot of comrades would put short messages to you, Cullum, and their signatures. But lo and behold, we're out of space in one card. So you hold that for the minute. We then had to go on to a second card, and then we went on to a third one, and we ran over on that. So these messages show the affection and the respect of the comrades for yourself, and we hope over the next few days you'll get a chance to read them. Now, the other thing I want on behalf of the whole party and all the comrades to present to Cullum is a scroll, and I just have to explain, first of all, when I show to you, it doesn't look like a scroll because we still haven't the finished product, which we want to be a proper scroll, Middle Ages style in its quality, but not in its ideas, obviously, as we've been talking about tonight, on canvas and properly lettered, but because of the perfection that we want for it, it would take another little bit of time. So, we have it here here tonight in tribute to our comrade and brother Cullum Halpin. And I want to read from it. 2016 marks the 30th anniversary of Cullum joining the militant. Personally, that was a life-changing decision for Cullum politically. It was the start of an enormous contribution to the revolutionary Marxist movement that has won Cullum the greatest respect and appreciation of generation of comrades and activists. His deep belief that the working class is the agency for change was shown time and again by the day-in, day-out support that Cullum gave to workers in struggles at Gatto, Irish Printed Circuits, Pat the Baker, Aldi and Gama and many more. Some of those struggles to comrades here wouldn't really be familiar because it was before their time. But I, as one of the veterans of our movement, can attest that one thing we always were absolutely certain of, that in every struggle, on every picket line, and on every demonstration, we would always have with us shoulder to shoulder Cullum, selling our paper, standing shoulder to shoulder with the workers, and representing not just the solidarity that we brought, but the ideas that we brought into the movement. And that, over 3 decades, is a tremendous tribute to any comrade in our organisation. Now we go on to say then that Colum, it says, holds strong opinions and is never hesitant about expressing them. That's absolutely true. I can tell you, even in the last few weeks, we had some good discussions down in his apartment in East Wall. Has been unflinching in his commitment to socialism. For the party, he also personifies a link back to the mighty working class struggles and movement of the early 20th century through his grandfather, William Howland, who was an active member of the Irish Citizen Army. And Colum is quite absolutely rightly enormously proud of that tradition in his family. And who wouldn't be? The Citizens' Army represented at that time really the flower of the Dublin working class in particular, in very difficult circumstances, who fought through the 1913 lockout and the horror, the heroism, of course, absolutely, but the horror also that represented for working class people and poor people in Dublin at that time and what they were subjected to by the tyrannical bosses of that day. Now, comrades, finally, the last part of our scroll refers to what Kevin alluded to, of Lenin's tribute to Trotsky, and therefore our tribute to Colum. Finally, I just want to say this to you, Colum. As Colum himself mentioned tonight, he has some health challenges. And when you get to our generation, Colum and I, health challenges are of the essence, really. But Colum, you can see here tonight, the comrades who are with you tonight, celebrating your achievements and your contribution. And to say to you, through the rest of your journey, we will be with you day in, day out, in solidarity and in love and in comradeship. And in that sense, I want to present to you, therefore, our tribute to you, to Colum Halpin, comrade and brother, no better Bolshevik.
Thank you so much.